We'll see the different forms of Krishna and Balaram.
Anything else? That's what? It's the most Aishwarya?
The last
name of that. Shows the most Aishwarya? Is that what you say? Did we say that last week?
What?
Did we say that last week?
Mentioned something
like that. Something like that. Okay, good. Any other points?
Yeah. Krishna is also very, very sad and distraught at leaving the gopis, which is, was a nice realization also.
Good. Yeah, so last week we also covered Varaha Gita, which is in chapter 39, verses 19 to 31. Okay. So tonight we'll continue with the pastime of Akrura in the Jamuna, and then tomorrow night we'll continue with the prayers of Akrura. So tonight we'll finish the chapter, so we'll go from verses 46 to 57. Text number 46. Akrura then saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead lying peacefully on the lap of Lord Anantasesh. The complexion of that Supreme Person was like a dark blue cloud. He wore yellow garments and had four arms and reddish lotus petal eyes. His face looked attractive and cheerful with its smiling, endearing glance and lovely eyebrows. Its raised nose and finely formed ears, and its beautiful cheeks and reddish lips. The Lord's broad shoulders and expansive chest were beautiful, and his arms long and stout. His neck resembled a conch shell, his navel was deep, and his abdomen bore lines like those of a banyan leaf. So this is a beautiful description. It's the beginning of a beautiful description of the Lord's Rupa. So when we're meditating on the Lord, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes, Harinand Chintamani describes, that we begin our meditation on Nama. Nama means the name of the Lord. When the name comes, Rupa. Rupa means his form. From his form comes Guna, means he manifests his qualities. And from Guna comes Leela. Leela means he expresses pastimes to display his qualities. And that is all orchestrated, all takes place in the Dham, which means his holy abode, with his paraphernalia and his associates. So this is a description of the Rupa of the Lord. Now at this point in time, Krishna is just leaving Vrindavan. So he's at Akrura Ghat. This is on the border of Vrindavan and Mathura. If you do Vrindavan Parakram, hands up if you've done Vrindavan Parakram. Okay, most of you have done. So if you go around, and then if you travel around the backside, and we generally start Krishna Balaram Mandir, so then we go down, then we turn right, and we go along where the Jamuna used to run, and then we go past the Jamuna to Keshi Ghat, and then we come back around, and then we go around what we call the backside of Vrindavan, where it's more peaceful. It used to be more peaceful, now it's becoming busier. And then you go, and then you're heading towards Mathura, actually. And then you're heading west, and then there's a sharp turn like that. Just the path goes like that. So that's Akrura Ghat at that place there. where the shots are. So the Jamuna used to flow around Vrindavan. Jamuna flows into Vrindavan, and you see she comes down near Keshigat, and then she turns around, and she goes back up, and she gets to Kurugat, and then she continues down. So when she hits Vrindavan, Jamuna is traveling from the Himalaya. So when she comes down, she gets to Vrindavan, because she's in such ecstasy to be in Vrindavan, she actually wants to stay in Vrindavan, but she can't. So then she does like a loop, tries to get around as much as she can, and then she continues along. So that place at Kururagat is significant because this is the border of Vrindavan and Mathura. So then Krishna leaves at that place. That's where this pastime is taking place, and then he goes to Mathura to visit his family members. So what takes place here, it's very significant because this is the border, and it is described, I've been studying in Krishna Sangati by Shivaram Swami, very significant book if you can, it's on the what are they called, the Vedabase, or is that what it's called, Vedabase, folio, is that different to Vedabase, or? Same thing, Vedabase. Okay, so if you look on Vedabase, there's extra books. So it's Shivaram Swami's books are on there. So Sri Krishna Sangati, it's on there. So you can look if you need to. So in that book, Maharaj elaborately describes this point of Krishna leaving Vrindavan. So that there are many layers in relation to this. Many, many layers. It's a little complicated. In another sense, it's not really complicated. It's just multi-layered. But you could say it takes a little bit of understanding, a little bit of depth. So on one level, he never leaves Vrindavan. On one level. When we get to this point right now where he's at the Jamuna, a Kuru goes into the water, and Krishna and Balaram are on the chariot, right? So that's Krishna and Balaram, the original forms. And then he's underwater. Now we hear what we're hearing now is a description of Mahavishnu and Anantasesh. So these are expansions. He's underwater and he sees Vishnu lying there on Anantasesh. So it's Krishna and Balaram have expanded into that form. So in one sense, they do not leave Vrindavan. The original forms stay there. At this point, it is the expansions. So it's signifying that when they cross the border on the chariot, it's not the original form. The original form stays back in Vrindavan. And there's many ways to explain what takes place there. So the question is, primarily, we'll read this in the next 10 or 11 or 12 chapters. Krishna says when he leaves to the gopis, we read during this chapter, he made a promise. Now what did he say to the gopis? I'll be back. Now, is it possible for Krishna to break his promise?
No.
No. Why?
He doesn't have any.
What's that?
He doesn't have to break his promise. He can do what he wants.
Yeah, he can. That's true. Achyuta, yeah, very good. He's infallible. Yeah, that's the answer. Huh? Will he break his promise? Can he break his promise?
Yes.
He can if he wants.
Yes, but then you have to say, if you say yes, then you have to justify.
To keep the devotee's promise.
To keep the devotee's promise? Yeah, you can say that.
He broke his promise during the Mahamudra for the Bhakti Mahamudra. So for him, quality is
Yeah, he broke his promise, but then he broke his promise to keep his higher promise. So yeah, he broke a superficial promise, but he doesn't break his main promise, which is that his devotees will never perish. So can he break his promise? That's the point.
No.
No, who says no? Okay, why?
Because personally, I believe he is dealing with his devotees differently than the non-devotees. When he gives promise to his devotee, he keeps his promise.
Why? The question is why? Why does Krishna not break his promise? If we're saying he doesn't, why? We have to understand why.
Because his devotees.
It's a deep subject. It's not a superficial subject. It's intrinsic to Krishna consciousness.
Because his devotees bind him with his love, with their love for him.
Okay, so if they bind him by his love, why will he not break his promise? Why? Because it will hurt them. Yeah. So why does he not break his promise?
Because he loves his devotee more than himself.
Yeah, because he loves his devotees more than himself. Very good. That's the answer. Right, he loves them, and you will never hurt someone that you love more than yourself. Right, because real love means that you love the other person more than yourself. That's real love. That is the essence of existence. That's why prema is said to be prayojana. Right, and Krishna's love for his devotees is infallible. So he cannot break his promise. He won't. Huh? So if he says he will come back, he will come back. And he does, the acharyas point out. He left, there's many explanations here. Even him leaving, there's many explanations. Right? In some places in the Shastras, like in the Garga Samhita, there's some very significant books in relation to these pastimes. There's Garga Samhita, there's a portion of the Padma Purana, and there's another place where it's written also. I'm just trying to think, it's not coming into my mind. So and it says in these different places that he came back after different amounts of time, and he visited in different time frames. So there are different descriptions, but the basic principle is that he will not break his promise, and if he says he will come back, he will come back to his devotees. Now the sweetest explanation is actually he came back every day. Every day he was coming back to Vrindavan. But then how was he coming back? There's many layers to that also. It is quite complicated actually. Because at this point in time he leaves, right? He's leaving Vrindavan, and then there are two pastimes which are taking place simultaneously, and both have equal merit, right? There's prakat and aprakat. Does anyone understand the meaning of the two? Prakat means manifest, aprakat means unmanifest. So at this point in time, when he gets to the border of Mathura and he enters, the Vrindavan nearly becomes aprakat, unmanifest. Right? He's still there, but he cannot be seen commonly. When he goes into, now he's going to Mathura, that's prakat, which means he's manifest, everyone can see him, right? So this aprakat lila is taking place all of the time, right? In one sense it's eternal because it's in the spiritual world, Goloka. We cannot see it, but it is always there. It's unmanifest to us, but it's always taking place. And even on earth, when it comes to the Bulma Vrindavan, the Gokul Vrindavan, simultaneously, even in his pastimes so far, sometimes it's prakat, sometimes it's aprakat. Sometimes he's there, sometimes he's unmanifest, but he's there. So the whole thing is very intrinsic. So the only way to understand it, you have to read the commentaries of the acharyas, and they will guide us. They will say, at this point it's like this, at this point it's like that. So it does get a little technical. So the basic premise or principle at this point, he leaves Vrindavan, but he never leaves. He just becomes unmanifest. Okay, so then where is he? If he's there, but he's not there, where is he? Yeah, Prabhupada gives one explanation that he enters the hearts of the devotees. So he's there, but because you know when they feel like he's there and they're still talking to him. And you saw previously in Gopi Gita, and then before that, so it must have been in chapter 30, we saw that they were wandering through Vrindavan and they could not see him as they were wandering. Through Vrindavan, but they felt like he was there. Remember when they went into the state of Unmada, chapter 30, and then as they were wandering through, in their madness, they started acting like him. And actually, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says because they were so absorbed in him, but he was aprakat at that time, he was not manifest before them, but they were so absorbed in him, they felt like he was actually there. And then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said he was there. Because the power of the love, they drew him there. Yeah. So it is a little complicated, it's intrinsic, it's a little difficult to understand on one level, but there's multifarious or multi-level explanations to all of this. But the basic principle is now leaving. But at the same time, he's staying in Vrindavan. And then he goes and he comes back. He does actually physically come back, like in a prakat way. It's not written in the Bhagavatam, though. So that's interesting also. It's not written in the Bhagavatam. So now the question may rise, why is it not written in the Bhagavatam? Because he does actually come back in his pastimes. He stays 3 months in Mathura, and then he comes back for 3 months to Vrindavan, and then he leaves again. Right? So why is that not written? Right? Because who is who is Shukadeva Goswami speaking to? Maharaj Parikshit. Right? And how is Parikshit related to Krishna? Now he's the grandson of Arjuna. Right? So he has the feelings that Arjuna and the Kauravas have. So then he's feeling, well, he gives the Brijbasis special treatment, but he may not have given the same special treatment to Arjuna, Yudhishthira, like that, in certain pastimes. So then Shukadeva Goswami is thinking, if I say all this to Maharaj Parikshit, he may be hurt. You may feel, he treat the Brijbasis better than he treated the Kauravas. So, because someone who is not a Brijbasi may not understand the exalted nature of the Brijbasi's love. He may think that the Dwarkabasis and the Brijbasis are equal. No. So therefore, because of that, then Shukadeva Goswami did not explain it. He didn't say that in the Bhagavatam, it doesn't say Krishna went back, but actually he did go back. It's in Garga Samhita, it's in Padma Purana, and there's another place where it's written too, but I can't think at this point. So, at this point in time, then he is leaving, and the description is given here of his rupa. Right? So the rupa is the rupa of Mahavishnu. We're hearing about Mahavishnu's form. So basically, we can parallel that description. It's the same as what was given in Yugala Gita. You know, which chapter is Yugala Gita?
35, very good.
Yeah, chapter 35. So the gopis give a similar description to what's being described now. But the gopis describe Swayam Bhagavan, and this is a description of Mahavishnu. So for us, if we have that bhav or have that inclination, or proclivity, then we will meditate on Krishna while we read the rupa, the description of the rupa. And it will remind us of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada says, and someone may say, well, that's a biased explanation, to say that we should meditate on Krishna when we're reading about Mahavishnu and Narayan. But if you read chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita in the purports, then Srila Prabhupada says, the followers of Lord Chaitanya should only meditate on the form of Krishna in Vrindavan. And he said they should not Prabhupada says, they should not divert their meditation onto any other form. So that's Prabhupada himself saying it. So Prabhupada says, do not divert your mind onto any other form except Krishna in Vrindavan. Don't even meditate on Krishna and Dwarka. Unless you're meditating on Krishna and Dwarka, meditating on Krishna and Vrindavan, then you can meditate on. And that form is called Jagannath. So that's how we meditate. Right? This is the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, you know, according to our atika or qualification, then we'll meditate. Right? If we're not qualified, then you just meditate on anything which is related to God. Right, in these descriptions. But if we're more rasic, right, if we become more purified and more advanced and more desirous of knowing Krishna, then we will meditate on this description, but in terms of being, well, that's what Krishna is like. Because if you read here, it says, he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead lying peacefully on the lap of Lord Anandasesh. So what does Lord Ananda Sesh look like? Big sarp, right? Big huge snake. So is there any pastime where Krishna is laying on a big snake? Not really. But probably there is something. Because he does everything. But no, you don't hear it regularly. So then how would we meditate?
Dancing on Kali.
Dancing on Kali, possibly, yeah. Yeah, you can meditate like that. That's nice. But how would we meditate? As if we're meditating on Krishna and Vrindavan, then how would we correlate this description to Krishna and Vrindavan?
Krishna
is
sitting in
that. That's better, yeah. Because who is Ananda Sesh? Right? So sometimes Krishna will lay his head on the lap of Lord Balaram. Or we will meditate, because Baladev Purnima is coming. We'll meditate Krishna is lying his head on the lap of Baladev. Ananda Sesh will never lie with his head on the lap of Mahavishnu. But in Vrindavan, because things are more intimate, there are exchanges there. So this, we have to learn to meditate like this. We have to understand the rasa which is taking place in Vrindavan, the intimate Vrindavan lila. Right? Then, the complexion of that Supreme Person was like a dark blue cloud. So what is the complexion of Krishna? Same. Yeah, same. Dark blue cloud. So that's easy. Lord Narayan, same. Lord Krishna, same. So when the gopis, they saw Lord Narayan, right? When they lost Krishna, right, in the forest, then they thought that was Krishna. They ran to him, and then they realized, oh, it's not Krishna. So then they said, Lord Narayan, have you seen Krishna? Right. And actually it was Krishna, but Krishna was manifesting Narayan Rupa. Right? So he did not say anything, so they said Namaskar, and they ran away looking for Krishna. Right? But then when Radharani came, then Krishna could not hold his Narayan Rupa anymore, and he turned back into Shyamasundara. Why is he that color? Why is he that bluish blackish color? That is the color of personified bliss. Because what is Krishna? He's personified bliss. So that color, which we have not seen, but that color is the color of personified bliss. That's why he has that color. He wore yellow garments and had four arms and reddish lotus petal eyes. So what is the same there? Yeah. Lotus eyes, yeah. But not as many arms. Yeah. So why the yellow garment? Because Srimati Radharani has that complexion. So Krishna always wears the color. Srimati Radharani. It means it's like a golden color. And what color does Radharani wear? Right. So she wears red sari. Sari is like reddish, but then she has like some veil which has like a bluish color. She always has something on her body which is the same color as Krishna. This is love. Especially when you're that age, when you're 16 years old. Boyfriend, girlfriends. They'll always do like that. They'll always wear like the color and like that to remind them. Because Radha is thinking of Krishna, Krishna is thinking of Radha, so they always wear the same color. Whatever she is wearing, whatever he is wearing, then they will always like that, just to remind each other. Then, his face looked attractive and cheerful with its smiling, endearing glance and lovely eyebrows. Yeah. What is the nature of Krishna's face? What does it say here? Always smiling. Huh? The longer you stay in the material world, the more you want to meet Krishna. Because the problem is in the material world, people don't smile enough. Right? And it starts to wear you down a bit over time. I know for myself I'm getting some very, very, very small desire to meet Krishna, because I think I'd just like to be with someone who's smiling. Because all the people here are crazy. Right? Always like, oh, going to be these dark moons all the time. And it's like, oh my God. Yeah. So this is an impetus. You know, because Krishna is not like that. Krishna is smiling practically all the time. He has other emotions as well. Not just smiling, but other emotions. But generally his countenance is smiling, blissful. Endearing glance and lovely eyebrows, its raised nose and finely formed ears, and its beautiful cheeks and reddish lips. So very similar to Krishna. The Lord's broad shoulders and expansive chest were beautiful, and his arms long and stout. His neck resembled a conch shell, his navel was deep, and his abdomen bore lines like those of a banyan leaf. So if you read the description of Krishna in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's very similar to this. It describes a Mahapurush. Mahapurush means a great person. They have 32 auspicious bodily symptoms. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru, had all 32 auspicious symptoms in his body. And Krishna obviously has them all too. So if you read in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, it explains all the auspicious symptoms. Any points so far?
You were mentioning that in the Bhagavad, it's not mentioned that Krishna went for 3 months to Mathura and then back to Vrindavan for 3 months. So is there a description given of this? Because that was a Prakat Leela, isn't it, that he went back. So is there a description given of what are the pastimes and what happens when he goes back for 3 months?
Padma Purana. What was the other one I said? Garga Samhita. Yeah, if you read Garga Samhita, it's described. Padma Purana is described, and there's one other as well, but yeah, it's slipping at the moment. I could look it up for you. Well, you just look in Krishna's Sangati. It describes what took place.
So this was continuous for those 18 years that he lived in Mathura, or it was only the first time after 3 months he went back, and that's it?
In terms of prakat, like manifest coming back, he comes back more than once over the time that he's on earth. So how many times he comes back, I'm not 100% sure, but he does come back. It describes that after he kills Dantabhakra, that's when he's living in Dwarka, he comes back to Mathura, kills Dantabhakra, and then he thinks, well, I'm here now, so then he goes back into Vrindavan. So there's more than one time. How many times? In prakat, I'm not sure how many times. But in terms of uprakat, he promises Radharani, I was telling you last week, right? He said to Radharani that I will come every day. He promised her that. So he had to come every day. And in Hamsadutta, there's one book by Rupa Goswami. So in Hamsadutta it mentions also, Radharani herself directly says, he comes every day. Not seen by everyone, but he comes. So that may be prakat, that may be aprakat, whatever it is, however it is that he manifests to her, but he comes every day. And the point is, by the strength of love, love controls Krishna, Sri Krishna Kashani. He's controlled by love. So when the love is intense, the devotee draws Krishna, controls Krishna. So Radharani, he cannot resist. He must come every day. Because he is too attached to her. Any points?
Prabhupada said that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So I can't understand the 3 months coming and going. Never leaves Vrindavan.
Prakat and aprakat. I already explained that.
Yeah, but
that's the answer. I can't say more.
What about the expansion? You say the expansion which goes to Mathura, original Krishna.
Vasudev Krishna goes to Mathura.
Yeah, that's the expansion.
Yeah, that's the expansion.
So the expansion of Lord Balaram as well as Lord Krishna goes to Mathura.
Yeah. So the original form comes back. Original form.
So original one always is still there, right?
In an unmanifest way, yeah.
Okay.
a manifest way.
So the part of Krishna that's in all of us, that's just his rays, his effulgence. So that's not uppercut?
The part of Krishna that's in all of us.
That's in all of us on earth now.
Paramatma.
The Paramatma.
That's an expansion of Krishna.
So but it's not considered uppercut.
Well, you can't see it, so that's uppercut.
So it is.
It's prakat and uppercut. That's a deep, more detailed thing. We won't go into that now. So. What does it mean? Literally, does anyone know what it literally means? Vasudeva. That's one meaning, yeah. Son of Vasudev. That's one meaning. Because he's the son of Vasudev. That's one meaning. Yeah, it has something to do with meaning Shuddhasattva, or pure goodness. Vasudeva means pure goodness. So Krishna is pure goodness and he's the son of Vasudeva. It may have other meanings as well. Did you write that one down? Anything else? Okay. He had large loins and hips, thighs like an elephant's trunk, and shapely knees and shanks. His raised ankles reflected the brilliant effulgence emanating from the nails of his petal-like toes, which beautified his lotus feet. So, when we're dealing with Krishna, this is Narayan that we're dealing with. So, if you read the Nectar of Devotion, there are 60 qualities which Lord Narayan has, which he shares with Krishna. But then there are 4 qualities that Krishna has only in Vrindavan. Right? You won't see these 4 qualities in Vasudev Krishna, in Dwarka, or Mathura. Right? Only in Vrindavan you'll see those 4 qualities. So what are they called? Venu Madhurya, very good. Rupa Madhurya, Lila Madhurya, very good. Prima Madhurya, very good. Yeah. So these 4 are only found in Vrindavan. Right? You won't find them in other places. No. Because Krishna only manifests himself completely in Vrindavan. Even when he goes to Mathura or Dwarka, Rupa Goswami gives a nice explanation in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says, when Krishna is in Dwarka, he is perfect. But when Krishna is in Mathura, he is more perfect. But when Krishna is in Vrindavan, he's most perfect. So does the Supreme Lord, but he displays more of his personality and more wonderful qualities when he's in Vrindavan. So in Vrindavan you'll see Rupa Madhurya, Prema Madhurya, Lila Madhurya, and Venu Madhurya. You'll only see the manifest. It's not that he will not play a flute in Dwarka ever. He will play flute in Dwarka, but not the way he will play it in Vrindavan. Not the mood will not manifest the same. So Vrindavan, actually in Dwarka he does show pastimes, and this is described in Lalita Madhava. Actually I think that's the other book which describes, Lalita Madhava, describes when Krishna returns. Maybe in Lalita Madhava. But when he's in Dwarka, in Lalita Madhava of Rupa Goswami, it explains that he has pastimes of Vrindavan even in Dwarka itself. Because he's so immersed in Vrindavan Leela, they create another Vrindavan. And there are pastimes there. And actually it's described, there are pastimes, not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but there are pastimes where the bridge passes even go to Dwarka and have pastimes with these there. And then in the Bhagavatam it's explained, very late in the Bhagavatam, we'll probably study in about 2 years from now, if Krishna allows us. Then it describes the pastime when they all meet at Kurukshetra. And then that pastime is described in the Bhagavatam, where the Brijbasis come, the Dwarkabasis come, Krishna comes, and they all meet at that place. And in some ways, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru, says they are the highest pastimes of all. What takes place in Kurukshetra, that is the highest of all of the pastimes, because they've been separated from him at that time for years, not even 3 months, but years and years and years. So when they meet again, it's like the intensity of the emotions which take place are the highest, highest things. And then what does Radharani say to Krishna? She gets there to Kurukshetra, right? She says, you are the same Krishna, I am the same Radharani, the moon is the same, but I cannot enjoy here. So you need to come back to Vrindavan right now. Only in Vrindavan can we all experience the same bliss that we experienced previously. For our pastimes, we need Vrindavan. And then actually they question him at that time too. We'll study this in the future, but they question him at that time. They said, why did you leave us? How could you leave us? And then Krishna says, and he said, I never have left you. Right? And we are always together. And our love is not decreased. Right? And then the gopis say then, you know, what sort of a lover, what sort of a person are you, that you would leave us like that? And Krishna says, well, if I am at fault, then you leave me now. But no one can leave, because they can't leave him. So even though he's not with them, he's with them. They only think of him all the time, so he's actually there, but he's not there. In the spiritual world, he's always with them, but when it comes to the material world, there is separation. And that's why the pastimes in the material world are more intense and even more exalted in some ways. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says the best of all the pastimes is Kurukshetra, because that's when the love is the most intense. So, any points?
Rukmini hid the Radharani in Navagraha. I read in a book that once Radharani came to see Krishna in Mathura, in Dwarka, and that time Rukmini took her and hid her in Navagraha.
Yeah.
And many, Krishna went to meet her in Navagraha.
I thought all the gopis were in there. And that's where the Gopi Chandan was in.
Yeah, Gopi Chandan comes from the tilak that we wear, that comes from Dwarka.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so all the Gopis where they stayed, that became sweet in the water.
Because they cried. Mm. And then they, I think the Chandan, where they make that Chandan, is from the Gopis' tears at that place.
Okay.
So. Okay, money, so. Okay. Adorned with a helmet, bracelets, and armlets, which were all bedecked with many priceless jewels, and also with a belt, a sacred thread, necklaces, ankle bells, and earrings, the Lord shone with dazzling effulgence. In one hand he held a lotus flower, in the other a conch shell, disc, and club. Gracing his chest were the Srivatsa mark, the brilliant Kostuba gem, and a flower garland. So here we're hearing about many of the features of the Lord's ornaments. So of all of the ornaments, which is considered to be the highest? In one sense, Kostubha, yeah, but out of all the ornaments? Srivatsa is not an ornament, it's hair. It's a tuft of hair which is on his chest, which is Lakshmi Devi. But of the ornaments that he wears, which is considered to be the
earring.
The earrings, which are in the shape of makara. So they're long. Makara means like a Yeah, it's like a it's like an alligator. Makara means like a sea monster. So it's like a alligator with a elephant's trunk. And it's got like the mouth is kind of like a fish, kind of like that. So it's kind of like you see, if you go to Vrindavan, you see many of the traditional deities, they have these earrings. So the deities we see in Vrindavan, because they're deities, then they're just standing, the earrings are just like that. But Krishna's always moving. So as he moves all the time, right, the earrings are always moving. So you can imagine, right? Imagine if, you know, the boys came to class tomorrow, you know, with like nice long earrings like this, right? How would that make you feel? Right. Yeah, we see Adi Purush walks in, he's got like these long earrings on. Like that. Right, and Gopi says, right, you're never coming back to the ashram again. So, but if you wear like that, right, everyone will automatically look at you. Right? And if you're Krishna, it's very attractive, especially when you're 16. Yeah, you see the boy, like Jai Kishan, he's 16, right? Yeah, so he's 16. So he walks in, he's got the hair, he's a good looking boy, you know, he's like a devata. Walks in, he's got the hair, so you know, he's got the hair all done. You know, and if he puts an earring in, you know, and there's another 16-year-old girl here, she'll be like, ooh, you know, it's like, you know, they're like, because that's the mood. So Krishna wears these beautiful earrings, and they're always swinging, and they reflect his skin. So they're gold or they are silver, and they reflect his, so they look like sapphire. And they're always swaying. So very captivating. So it says of all the ornaments, it's the most captivating. But he wears so many ornaments on his body. What does he wear on his upper arm?
Armlets.
What are they like?
Gems.
Which gems?
Pearls.
Hmm?
Pearls.
Close. You know, in sometimes for Jyotish, you know, you get like a ring or an amulet, and it has the 9 gems for the 9 planets.
Yes.
So he wears that.
Navaratna.
Yeah, Navaratna. So he has the 9 gems, and he ties it. And then it's, you know, got some like dangly bit there. So when he walks, it kind of, you know, swings and you know. Only he can dress like this. He wears it, so he's got this on. And then he's got bracelets. And bracelets are made of diamonds. Beautiful diamonds, like must be large. You can only imagine, but it must be very beautiful. yeah, when I read about him, I just think, who is this guy? You know what I think? You know, every day I bow to him, I think of him, I pray to him, I chant his name. Because, you know, when I do puja in the morning, there's a section where you do manasa puja. So I meditate on all these things, like as we're dressing him. But then when I start dressing him, then in my mind I think, who is this guy? Who dresses like this? Right. He's so, you know, his mood is like he's 60. Remember we read earlier in the Bhagavatam, he's intoxicated.
Mm.
What's he intoxicated with?
With his youth.
Yeah, he's intoxicated with himself, with his youth. To dress like this, you have to be intoxicated with yourself. Yeah, so he is intoxicated. So how many rings does he wear on his fingers?
Everything.
Every finger has a ring. No, every finger has a ring. Who dresses like that? I think, I don't know, but it says every finger, so maybe on the thumb also. So he dresses like that. And then he has on his ankles, he has beautiful ankle bells, so whenever he dances, it makes beautiful sounds like that. So he dresses very, very beautifully. And then it says he wears pearls, and the pearl, like long necklaces, and one necklace covers his chest, so about that long. Then another necklace goes down to his belly, so a long necklace, and then another one goes down to his knees. So who dresses like this? Imagine if some devotee walks into the temple like this. Right. But this is how he dresses. Right? And then he wears garlands, and the garlands go almost to the ankles, and they sway. So whenever he dances, everything is moving very beautifully. So he dresses in such a way that it intoxicates the devotees. So it describes here many of the marks which are there. But when we meditate on Krishna. So we have to become familiar with Krishna's ornaments like that when you meditate on them.
In Arabic, there's a saying that I've never heard in English, and I don't know if it exists in Hindi, but it says, loosely translated, it's bilbatlu, which loosely translated means, but it suits him. So what it means is if someone says, oh, that girl's wearing a beautiful dress, look at how gorgeous it is, it's a bit revealing, but it suits her, so she can pull it off kind of thing. Mm. So maybe it's not just that who dresses like that, it's also who else could it suit but him? Mm. He can pull it off, he's that gorgeous, he can do it.
Yeah, good. Anything else?
The flowers also mentioned different flowers.
How many different flowers in the garlands?
Five,
yep. And then sometimes it says seven, like that. But yeah, five flowers, five different types of flowers.
So all these diamonds and rings and all that, that's not in Vrindavan.
Yeah, in Vrindavan. What I'm describing is Krishna in Vrindavan. No, on top of the jewels, then he wears flower ornaments on top of that. So first he dresses like that. So you can just imagine the guy. He's already dressed in the jewels and then he starts doing the flowers on top of that. So very, very elaborate.
He's spiritual. It's not material, he's spiritual.
It's not material?
Yeah, he's spiritual, no? He's spiritual. His jewelry, his form and his garland, everything is spiritual.
It's all spiritual?
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. So
Elsevier described that Krishna and Balaram always are dressed like drama artists. You know, the artists who are to perform drama, or they are overdressed to look nice on the stage. Somewhere I read that they are always overdressed to look nice.
Yeah, dramatic dancers.
Not all.
Yeah, always dressed like very, like it's a drama, like there's a whole, because wherever Krishna walks, it's a walking festival. It's a Mahotsava. So he's just swept up in the drama of the whole thing. So.
Actually,
Nityananda
always used to do that too.
Where is that? Nityananda, yeah. And then on his chest, it mentions here, he has Kostubha Mani. Kostubha Mani means? Kostubha gem. And it says the Kostubha gem is constituted of all the living entities, their atmas. So in one sense, all of us are also situated on Krishna's chest. It's the jewel he always wears because he keeps all of us close to his heart. So every jiva is within that, and it just glows with the most amazing radiance. And on that gem, there is a On the gem, the Kostubha Mani, there's the carving of a cow. A calf. So engraved on the jewel, the Kostubha Mani, there's a calf engraved. Because Krishna's dearest possession are his calves, these cows. And then he has the one other jewel called the moon locket, which I've described before. So what does that one do? Shines, very good. Shines. So it's like the moon, but it's congealed moonbeams. So at night time, when it goes out into the forest, the moon locket melts, and the gem melts back into the moonbeams. And then when he finishes at the end of the night, then all the moonbeams, they come, and they congeal into a gem like a pearl, and they harden, and then during the day he wears it there. and it glows like a moon, like the moon, like a pearl, like glowing. It's very beautiful.
The peacock feather isn't mentioned here yet. I don't know if it's going to be mentioned, but so far, is that also just Krishna?
No, in Dwarka he wears it.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Jagannath wears it.
He wears it in different places, but especially in Vrindavan, he likes to wear it. What does the peacock feather represent? What's that?
Radharani's eye.
I haven't heard that, but you heard that? Could be. Yeah. That's a nice description. I haven't heard that. But. It's said to be the seal, you know, like when a king sends a letter, and then in the old days when they close the letter, then they melt the wax and they put a seal, like a stamp. You know what I'm talking about? So he always wears a peacock feather. That's the seal, like his mark, right? That he is the master, right? And whatever he does is the most. He's called Rasa Raj. So it means that it's like his seal of expertise. Whatever he does, he's dancing, he's singing, it's the most beautiful. Because the peacock feather is the most beautiful symbol. So it is his symbol of expertise.
There is a song, Madhurarpate Namah.
Yeah. Madhurarpate.
I especially like that the peacock gives him the feather. He doesn't just.
Yeah, and there's a pastime where him and Radharani turn into peacocks. So to remember the pastime of turning into peacocks, he always wears them. Because Radharani says to Krishna, the peacock is dancing, and Radharani says, the peacock dances better than you. And Krishna said, no, I dance better than the peacock. She said, then show me. So he gets up and the peacock dances, then he dances, right? And she said, the peacock is better. So then he turns into a peacock. And then he dances, even more beautiful than the other peacock. And then she becomes so attracted, she steps up and she takes the form of a peacock. And she dances with him. So to remember these pastimes, then he always wears the peacock feather. Shri Krishna Tanda Bhagavan, a key.
Yeah. So, what happens to the moon? He said that this earth jewel melts.
The moon melts into one jewel on his chest called moon locket. So, it's a jewel.
Mm.
And the moon melts, the moon beams, they come and then they harden. And during the day, he has that on his chest.
Mm-hmm.
And at night time, it melts and it goes back into the moon.
So, what is it called?
Moon locket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In Sanskrit it would have a name, but I don't know what the name is. Okay. Encircling the Lord and worshipping him were Nanda, Sunanda, and his other personal attendants, Sanaka and the other Kumaras, Brahma, Rudra, and the other chief demigods, the nine chief Brahmanas, and the best of the saintly devotees, headed by Prahlad, Narada, and Upari Chara Vasu. Each of these great personalities was worshipping the Lord by chanting sanctified words of praise in his own unique mood. Also in attendance were the Lord's principal internal potencies, Shri, Pushti, Gir, Kanti, Kirti, Tushti, Ila, and Urja, as were his material potencies, Vijja, Avijja, and Maya, and his internal pleasure potency, Shakti. So, Krishna has unlimited potencies and each potency is personified. So we say that he has six opulences. Aishwaryasya, Samagrasya, Viyasha, Yashasha, Shriya, Gyanavairagiyas, Chaiva, Shanambhaga, Itingana. Right? So he has six opulences. So here, those six are mentioned. So it says that, where is it? Shri means?
Opulent.
Yeah, the wealth, like that. Unlimited, Aishwarya. Shri. That's why Lakshmi is called Shri, because unlimited opulence Krishna has. So it personifies. So it's surrounded by his Shaktis, they personify. So he has unlimited wealth. Pushti means?
Strength.
So there's Pushta Krishna. That's the name of Krishna. Pushta Krishna, which means unlimited strength or power, unlimited energy, which is there. Then, Gira. Gira means?
Knowledge,
learning. Kanti means?
Beauty.
Very good. Kirti?
Fame.
And Tushti.
Renunciation.
Yeah, so there's the name of Krishna. Tushta. Tushta Krishna. Prabhupada gave one of his disciples that name. Tushta Krishna. Tushta Krishna means?
Yeah.
Tushti means satisfied. So when you're satisfied, you are? Pronounced. Yeah. Just like after you eat the Gopanim feast, how do you feel?
Full.
So how do you feel?
Tushti.
Means I am satisfied. So when you're satisfied, you're very renounced. Right? Everyone brings you gulab jamuns, you say, no. I don't need it. Okay, that's not a good example. But they bring, like, you know, when you've eaten good feast, and then devotees bring more prasad, you're like, no, I'm controlled. I am so controlled. Right? Fully in control of my senses. I don't need anything else. Like that. But before the feast, right, you have no control. But Krishna is always like that. Right? He's known as Tushta Krishna. I was thinking about that quality today while I'm driving up to give the class. I was meditating on this point, and I was thinking to myself, when will I get this quality? Tushti. Tushti means? Yeah, Krishna is renounced. Right? He has all qualities, but he's not attached to anything. Why? Because he's satisfied. And I was thinking, why aren't I like that? I'm still attached to this and this, you know. Someone said something to me today. You can guess who. It's up to you. You can. Right?
You've already guessed it when you said meditative.
Yeah. No, that's different. That was there, but then the second one came from the subtle platform. So, not from that. But yeah, then something then just disturbs the consciousness. So I'm driving up and I'm thinking, you know, and then it takes you time to reconcile, you know, to get your mind peaceful again. So I think I have to come and give class. I have to be, you know, peaceful. So then I'm thinking, why do I get disturbed by things? Why do I get disturbed by things? Because I'm not satisfied just in my relationship with Krishna. Because if you're satisfied in your relationship with Krishna, material things do not affect you or disturb you. But because we're not on that platform, someone says something to us, we become very disturbed. So that's because we have a lacking in our consciousness. Hare Krishna. Okay, one more verse. I'll just read this one more.
What about Ila and Urja? Ila and Urja.
Ila and Urja.
Yeah.
What does the meaning? Prabhupada says the end of the purport. He says, Where is it? Ila is the Bhu Shakti. Sandini. Urja is the internal potency for performing pastimes, who expands as the Tulsi plant in this world. Yeah, it's there. It's there. You can read it. As the great devotee Akrura beheld all this, he became extremely pleased and felt enthused with transcendental devotion. His intense ecstasy caused his bodily hairs to stand on end and tears to flow from his eyes, drenching his entire body. Somehow managing to steady himself, Akrura bowed his head to the ground. Then he joined his palms in supplication and, in a voice choked with emotion, very slowly and attentively began to pray. So this is quite different to the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, the bridge buses. It's quite different. Because the crew is in? Dasyaras, yes. So the mood is quite different to the resident of Vrindavan. So this is like a comparison. We're seeing in this chapter, the Viraha Gita of the gopis, right now you're seeing Akrura's mood. Right, so it's like a juxtaposition or a, how do you say it? It's a comparison. So it shows the difference of the mood of the devotees in Mathura and the mood of the devotees in Vrindavan. And the two are not comparable. Right, and it says that amongst all the Brijbasis, then the intensity of love of the gopis is far, far, far more intense and superior in one sense. And it says then of all the gopis, it says there are the eight. Who are the eight principal? That's the other eight. That's the left eight. But then, remember there were eight that Vishwanath gave us? Bhadra, Padma, Shaibya, Chandravali, right? Shamsaki, Lalita Vishaka, and Radharani. So it says of all the gopis, then you have those eight, and it says of those eight, then Chandravali and Radha, and then it says Radharani's love is far, far, far superior to anyone else's. So when you were comparing Radharani's love to everyone else's, everything becomes less and less. And the further you go away from Vrindavan, the power of the love becomes less powerful. Sri Krishna Chandra Bhagwan Aki. So tomorrow night we'll hear about Akrura's prayers. It said that Akrura became perfect by offering prayers to Krishna. Mandalam, very good. So tomorrow night we'll hear about his prayers. Jai.